John, every Timberwolves fan I encounter these days asks me, are the Timberwolves blowing it? It is fascinating to cover the Minnesota Timberwolves and have the occasional victory cause panic in the streets, but that is the nature of this franchise. Let's talk about it here on the John Krasinski Show with John Krasinski from The Athletic. I'm Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. This is John's show about the Timberwolves and the NBA, and the Timberwolves continue to be fascinating to me. Let's get into all the newsy developments and what their plans are for the stretch run here. This is part of TalkNorth.com. You can find all the shows at TalkNorth.com. Go to TalkNorthPod on Twitter. See shows as they are released. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. And thank you to our sponsors, TSR Injury Law and Manscaped. All right, John, how should Timberwolves fans be contemplating the end of the season? Should they be panicked that the Timberwolves might not get a top three pick? Or is it more important, as Chris Finch has said, to start learning how to win together?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at the way that it's played out, it's kind of funny. It's like, okay, they won four in a row, and they're playing very, very well. And then they lose on Saturday night. And guess what? They're still third right now in the standings. And so they still are in that the very same spot, essentially, that they were before. And with their odds. Now, they have a lighter schedule coming up with Orlando. Miami's banged up. They got some teams that they can beat down the stretch, Detroit as well. And so they might kind of leapfrog and get into a spot where they were going. They're in jeopardy of losing their pick, a little bit more in jeopardy of losing their pick than there were before. But the thing that I look at is they were always in real jeopardy of losing their pick, because even if they're in the top three, they still had a 60% chance of it not being in the top three, just with the way that the odds stack out. And if they drop down to five or six, you're only losing somewhere in the area of 5% chance of not being in the top three there. So that, to me, is not sort of worth it to just blatantly and openly tank, to just say, hey, we're sitting Russell, we're sitting Towns, we're just not going to compete over these last, you know, amount of games. To me, here's the biggest thing that I look at is, for this kind of edition of the Wolves roster, that for it to work, for them to sort of come out of the gutter where they are and become a playoff team, obviously getting Cade Cunningham number one would be an enormous boost and a help. That'd be incredible. There's no denying that at all. But what you need the most is for Towns and Russell and Edwards to work together and to become a trio that is successful on the court. And prior to this little kind of uptick in success on the court, we had not seen that at all. And you're looking at it and you're saying, man, what is the pathway to this core being successful in the NBA? And that, to me, was casting a pall over this whole operation. But at least in these last seven or eight games, you're starting to see what success would look like, and that it is possible to have these guys be kind of the center point of your operation and to win games. I mean, they're beating Utah twice. You know, they're winning. They're beating Golden State. They're winning against quality opponents who are in the thick of the playoff chase and need to win these games. So this is not an example of, you know, kind of teams just not really paying attention down the stretch. They're playing teams with a lot on the line and still beating them, and so that's a good sign. And so I think, like, overall, if they can sort of establish some sort of foundation that says, if we do this, this core can be a good team. It doesn't mean they're a great team, but a good team. That, to me, is the most important thing to establish. And I think they are starting to do that. So that's why I'm not as concerned about the pick as some others are.
The other thing I would suggest, and you're the expert, you tell me, Cunningham is a really good player. He'd be an easy fit into the starting lineup. He moves the ball well. He has size, wingspan, all those things. But is he the kind of guy you tank for? Is he the franchise changing superstar that makes tanking worthwhile if you could possibly get to that position? Or is he just a good player?
Well, so yeah, it's a good question, Jim. I've had the same thoughts because, you know, I haven't watched him every game all season long. I watched him in the tournament. I've watched him in fits and starts here, and he's had moments where he's been just jaw dropping. There's been other times where he's played well, but it's just like, okay, you know, this isn't like, you know, LeBron James type of a situation. But you talk to talent evaluators, and they've been on this kid for a long, long time, and they believe that he really is a huge difference maker. That, you know, it's not necessarily that he would come in and score 35 and do kind of all of that, but it seems like he's that guy that you plug in, you can play him in all kinds of positions all over the court. He makes the people around him better, and he can shoot it really well, and he can score. And so, you know, I think that he is certainly more highly thought of. Let's put it this way. He's much more highly thought of in the scouting world than Anthony Edwards or even LaMelo Ball were, you know? And so we went into last year kind of thinking, you know, what are the ceilings on these guys that have come up and, you know, hey, the Wolves got the number one pick. Is that really all that great? And I think personally, after watching this season play out, you look at Anthony Edwards, you look at LaMelo Ball as well, and you say, those are two franchise players. Like they have incredible talent, and if you build around them the right way, you can really be successful. And so if they kind of are in that boat, and then you have Cunningham, who is, I think, widely believed to be a cut above those guys just from a prospect standpoint, I think it tells you that, you know, he's a pretty damn good player. And if you got him, that would really improve your team dramatically right away.
Yeah. And when I watch Cunningham play, I see a guy who would fit. The nice thing about him is I think he's an incredibly safe pick. Where Edwards was kind of a reach, right? A 19-year-old who would play. We knew he had talent. We didn't know how the talent would translate. We didn't know what the maturity level was, all those other things. And it ends up, I think they took the right guy. But it was a bit risky. I think Cunningham is really safe, and I think he can play in all kinds of situations, schemes, he can play different positions. He's going to make people around him better. I think he's really safe. I just don't know if he's going to like be a guy who takes over games, or if he's just going to be a guy who plays well.
Yeah, that's a good question. And so it feels like he is more, and everyone calm down when I say this, but he is more in the LeBron category, like when he first came out, in terms of like, this is a guy who is going to have his fingerprints on so many different parts of what you do. And it's not always going to be 37 points and, you know, shooting 48% from three and doing this and that. It's going to be, you know, the kind of player that, you know, that in 3 or 4 years, let's say you have some veterans that have kind of crisscrossed the league and have bounced around to different teams and it hasn't worked out. Then all of a sudden they come to a team with Cade Cunningham and he just figures out ways to unlock them. You know, LeBron with Dwight Howard, with Rajon Rondo, with, you know, all sorts of different players who have come through his orbit, they all seem to find ways to get better. JaVale McGee, like all these different, you know, kind of players that have bounced in and out of different situations and have worked and have not worked. You get them with LeBron and it's just magic. It's like it just works unbelievably well. And now LeBron obviously is also morphed into just this unbelievable offensive force from scoring standpoint, can do whatever he wants that way, in addition to his passing that unlocks everything. But, I mean, you look at the way that he imprints games, and it's different than the way that James Harden imprints games or Kevin Durant imprints games. It's it's on a different level that way. And I think Cunningham is more along the I'm the guy that sort of is the center of the universe, but all of these moons that are, you know, orbiting my planet, they're all benefiting from what I bring to the table. And so that's kind of a convoluted way of trying to explain it, but that's kind of the player that I see is like is the one that makes everyone around him better as much as he totally like individually dominates a game.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I still remember you gave me a flashback. I remember covering LeBron's first game at Target Center, and I think Mike Brown was the coach, and they kept sending him to the corner on offense. He just would run to the corner and nobody would pass the ball. I'm like, what the hell are they doing? This guy could be your point guard, your shooting guard. He should be touching the ball in every series. And he would just run to the corner and they'd ignore him. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, there's a reason that, you know, and I love Mike Brown to death, but there's a reason that he's not a head coach anymore. Right. You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, that's right. And for LeBron, like in particular, like even with all of that hype that followed him, even as a rookie, he came in and you're like, you looked at him and you looked at the way that he moved and his understanding of the game and all of those things. And you said, man, like this guy is as advertised and he's really advertised as being one of the best ever. And so I don't, you know, Cade Cunningham, I don't think is nearly going to have that kind of impact. Really, we're talking about, you know, the best or the second best player of all time. But I think that he's a guy that, If you brought him in today, like let's just say that, you know, it's like the NHL and you can draft players and then they can join your team right in the middle of a playoff run. He could come in and fit in right away and be a positive player as a 19-year-old and help you win games immediately. And then over the course of the next 3 to 4 years, he's going to morph into the player that doesn't just help you win games, but that wins games. Like that just does it and takes things over. And so that's what people see in him. And then you have like Evan Mobley and you have Suggs and you have Jalen Green, like got all guys that are like really high end that I think all four of the top four prospects might have gone number one last year. And that's what scouts believe about a lot of these guys. And so, you know, again, they could all be wrong, but that's just kind of the depth of talent that is at the very, very top of this draft. And then getting back to, long story longer, for the Wolves. So to me, there's two ways to do it. Like, you know, either they're in the top three and it all goes well, but if you don't think you're going to get there, win as much as you can right now. Like right. Pile up as many wins as possible. So now maybe you're in six or seven and maybe then you drop down to seven or eight. And then that pick doesn't look as damaging to lose. It would still be damaging to lose. There's no doubt about that. But if the Warriors are picking eighth instead of fourth, that really changes how you right. feel about yeah. that pick and about that trade, because Wiggins is leveled off for Golden State in a major way, and D'Angelo Russell is coming on. So that gap is starting to close. And then if you factor in that pick, and if it's not number four, and if it's number eight, now, it's still not a great trade, but it's not nearly the disaster it was looking like it could have been.
That's a really good point, a good way to look at it. Let's talk about D'Angelo Russell and Jared Culver. First, let's thank TSRinjurylaw.com, 612-TSR-TIME, 612-TSR-TIME. We don't want you to need ever an injury lawyer, but if you do need an injury lawyer, you need a good one. You need one that is reputable, one that has built its business with ethical practices, and that will not charge you unless they win your case. That all describes TSR Injury Law. You go to TSRinjurylaw.com and fill out a free case review there. But just remember, 612-TSR-TIME. If you get hurt, just call it and you'll deal with the lawyer and they will take good care of you. 612-TSR-TIME. Also want to thank Manscaped, manscaped.com.
That's right, Jim. Flowers are blooming, the grass is growing, and it's time to chop the weeds. Thanks to our sponsor, Manscaped, you can trim your holes safely and efficiently. I'm talking about ball trimmers. Manscaped, the global leader in men's below-the-waist grooming, have an exclusive offer for our audience. Use the code ATHLETIC to get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Manscaped, have you heard about their weed whacker? This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. No more gross nose hairs flying around in the wind. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. It's starting to get hot outside, and this is crucial so your balls stop sticking to your leg. Legit the worst. Speaking of smelling fresh, complete your grooming game this spring with the new Refined Cologne signature scent by Manscaped. This stuff is legit and will have you smelling like royalty. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ATHLETIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code ATHLETIC at manscaped.com. It's spring cleaning, baby, and your balls will thank you.
Brandon, we need to put like an R rating on this show or like some kind of a listener warning before John does the Manscaped ads.
Delicate also, content
yes, coming. Yes. Also, if you'd like to advertise with this network or this show, you can reach Karen Cleary at KCLEARY at TalkNorth.com. We continue to grow the network. We have added Lavelle Neal to our baseball show with Roy Smalley. I already like doing the show with Roy, but with Lavelle, it's even better. And I am also doing my own show, Blocked and Needed, with Jim Suhan. Garrett Bradbury was my guest last week. It's a lot of fun. Thank you for listening to that as well. All right, so we have an update on Jared Culver.
Yeah, so he is having ankle surgery this week, and to remove a loose body from the ankle that the Wolves say has been bothering him for the last couple of weeks. It's very interesting, Jim, that they say he's been bothered for the last few weeks with this ankle surgery or ankle injury, and yet he has never been listed on the injury report for games. But you know, I guess that's neither here nor there at right now. But it has ended his season, and really the big picture part of this is that it's just a lost season for Jared Culver. And I will say that, you know, Gerson Rosas and this front office have largely done a really good job in the draft. Now we can debate Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball, but Anthony Edwards looks like a franchise type player.
Yep.
Jaden McDaniels, great pick. You know, Jalen Noel in the second round before he got hurt was looking like a productive player, which is what you want. Naz Reid, undrafted free agent, and he's in your rotation. Really good pickup. But certainly right now, the Jared Culver pick looks like a big swing and a miss for this franchise. He just has not kind of gained any traction. He plays very tentatively. He does not look comfortable here at all. And I don't know what the future holds, but I just would be surprised to see him in a Timberwolves uniform next season. Because if he is, I just don't see how he plays unless there's just remarkable improvement on his end all this summer long. He does not fit the profile of what they need from a player and what they want. And he just has really played poorly for the first now two seasons in this league. And so that's just what I'm looking at here. It's just too bad for Jared. I think he's a good kid and a really hard worker, but man, it just has not worked out from a fit standpoint or a skill standpoint so far. He looks in over his head.
Yeah, the way he shot in the final four game at US Bank Stadium was kind of a preview of his Timberwolves career.
Yeah, it was, and I remember I still remember that final four, Jim. And I was there too. And you heard, okay, Texas Tech is in this thing, and their big guy is Jared Culver. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm gonna watch this kid and see what he brings to the table. And I just didn't see a whole lot. And look, I've been wrong on a million guys, but when I watched him play just in that tournament, it's a very small sample size and all that. I just saw a player that didn't really kind of, you know, force his way onto a game and really make you, you know, kind of feel like this is a star player in the making, that he has got control of this team and he's taken this team over and he's one of the better players on this court. He just wasn't. And so he rocketed up the draft boards. And you know, the Wolves picked him, and I think they kind of saw him as being sort of like a, you know, Houston. Let's look at everything through the Houston lens. They had guys like Trevor Ariza and Luka Mbamute around James Harden as really hardcore perimeter defenders who could help your defense and then also knock down the open three. And Culver just has not been able to knock down the open three. That's one thing. But B, like, the guys like Ariza and Bamute, like, they play with force and like they get into you and they make you understand that they're out there and they're right in your hip pocket wherever you go from a defensive standpoint. And Culver just, he was just pushed around a lot and he just looked like he was overpowered physically. And so it just has never translated to the NBA game. And, you know, you look at a Kobe White, you know, he's played well in Chicago, but I don't think it's like a situation like, oh man, they really missed out on Kobe White. But, you know, they're just, it has not worked out. There were other options that they could have gone with. They could have stayed where they were, picked Tyler Hero or someone like that. And you know, he's had his ups and downs in Miami as well, but you at least would have got some ups with Culver. We just have not seen any of the ups that would kind of merit a number six overall pick.
Yeah. I actually covered, Texas Tech in the West Regional that year. They sent me out to Anaheim to cover that. And, you know, listen, Culver was a very good college basketball player. Tech was a great story and they played great team defense and he really fit into what they wanted to do very well, but you watched him, you know, you watched him shoot sometimes and he just didn't look confident. And that's just that's a horrible, I mean, you know, it's for all the other things we talk about in terms of skills and athletic ability, man, if you're not confident in the NBA, you are done.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the word that I've used to describe him since he set foot here is timid. Like, and that's just it. And you cannot be timid in this league because they will chew you up and spit you out. And these players recognize that sort of softness and that, you know, the lack of confidence and yeah, just, you know, he just looks like he's walking on eggshells all the time. And so when you play that way, you're going to get identified and you're going to get singled out and you're going to get exploited until you're not playing. And he eventually was played out of the rotation. How much the ankle had to do with it, maybe it did have a little bit to do with it, but long before there was any signs of any ankle issues, he looked overwhelmed and out of place on the court. And that's just unfortunate. So I don't know if a change of scenery will help. Maybe it will. But unless he somehow discovers some kind of a harder edge and a more aggressive nature, I just don't see it working out for him. And that's the hardest thing. Like, you can work on your jumper, you can work on your handle, you can work on a lot of different things, but if you just don't have that dog in you, if you don't have that competitive nature in you, it's just not going to work.
Last topic for today. Thank you for listening to TalkNorth.com. We do appreciate it. D'Angelo Russell has been really interesting since he's come back. And among the many things that we've seen is that he has shot it extremely well, especially in the first half. His second half shooting percentages have been a little down. Do you think that's just conditioning?
It's a good question, Jim. I think so. I mean, that's the only thing I have to point to at this point, because prior to this season or prior to that injury and him coming back, you know, one of his things was the ice in his veins, right? The thing, you know, he was able to kind of make big shots late in games and take over late to help his teams win games. But we have not seen that here. He was 1-for-12 from three on Saturday. And one of the reasons they lost the 10-point lead in the final 4 minutes is that it felt like Russell and Towns were kind of going too much hero ball, as both Russell and Finch put it after the game, and they weren't making the shots, Russell in particular. So that, you know, it could be that he's just kind of still getting his legs back underneath him, that he's trying to find his way that way, because he has told Chris Finch that 30 minutes is kind of the limit right now where he feels comfortable. And so if you're already, even though the minutes restriction has been taken off of him, if he is independently saying, hey, look, coach, I need to be around 30 minutes. That's where I'm at my best. That just tells you that his body is not in top shape right now. And, you know, so maybe he is wearing down a little bit. Maybe he's forcing things a little bit because he wants to be the player that is looked at as kind of the clutch performer. But I think that that is going to be one thing that this team really has to look at, and maybe it can help down the stretch with these last seven games or so, is how do you sort of build a late game offense around this core? And you have Edwards, who's this wrecking ball going to the basket and should be able to get foul calls and get buckets at the rim. You have Towns, who has, you know, just a plethora of moves and is usually ultra efficient, but is a post player and needs help getting the ball in those situations. Then you have Russell, who can create his own shot, who can hit from the outside. But when he's not hitting shots, when he's not knocking them down, then he becomes a negative. When he forces things, then the offense short circuits and they can't hold off teams that are charging back at them. So they're going to have to try and figure long term how the three of them fit together, how you divvy up the shots, how you make sure everyone stays involved and you get good offense late in games, because it was not good offense late on Saturday against the Pelicans. And Russell was a big part of the reason why it wasn't good offense.
Good stuff from John. John and I also do the Viking Update Show, where we got into a lot of Viking draft topics, including Justin Fields, Mac Jones, what they should have done in the first round, whether we like the picks or not. Thanks to everyone who listens to TalkingRock.com. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. We'll be back next week.